Reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chapter 8, Talks Between the Lord and Ramananda Rai. Today we're doing texts 24 through 28. So I'll read 24 through 27. We can do 28 together. Stambaveda Ashru Kampa Pulaka Vaivarnya Dunharamu Keti Shuni Gadgada Krishna Varna. When they embraced one another, ecstatic symptoms, paralysis, perspiration, tears, shivering, palpitations, and paleness appeared. The word Krishna came from their mouths falteringly. Dekiha brahmana ganhera haila chamatkara vaidika brahmana shabda karena vichara. When the stereotyped ritualistic Brahmins who were following the Vedic principles saw this ecstatic manifestation of love, they were struck with wonder. All these Brahmins began to reflect as follows. Etanyasa shira teja deki brahma sama sujalingiya kene karena krandana. These Brahmins began to think, oh, we can see that this sannyasi has the luster like the effulgence of Brahman. But how is he crying upon embracing a sudra, a member of the fourth caste in the social order? E Maharaja Maha Pandita Gambira Sanyasira Sparse Mata Haila Arastira. They thought, this Ramananda Rai is the governor of Madras, a highly learned and grave person, a Maha Pandit. But upon touching this sannyasi, he has become restless, like a madman. So let's do 28 together. E Mata Vipragana Bhave Mane Mana. Vijatiya loka deki prabhu akhaila sambarana. E mata vipragana bhave mane mana. Vijatiya loka deki prabhu akhaila sambarana. He mata vipragane bhave mane mana. Vijatiya loka deki prabhu kaila sambharana. He mata vipragane bhave mane mana. Vijatiya loka deki prabhu kaila sambharana. Ladies? Emata. In this way. Vipragana. All the Brahmins. Bhave. Think. Mane mana. Within their minds. Vijatiya. Vijatiya loka, outside people, deki, seeing, prabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, kaila, did, sambarana, restraining. Translation. While the Brahmins were thinking in this way about the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the Brahmins and restrained his transcendental emotions. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Ramananda Rai was intimately related to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, he can be accepted as a sajatiya, a person within the intimate circle of the Lord. The Brahmins, however, were followers of the Vedic rituals and were not able to have an intimate connection with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Consequently, they are called vijatiya loka. In other words, they were not pure devotees. One may be a learned, highly learned Brahmin, but if he is not a pure devotee, he is vijatiya, an outcast, an outside of devotional service. In other words, a non-devotee. Although Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai were embracing in ecstasy, the Lord restrained his transcendental emotions upon seeing the outsider Brahmins. So, the verses again. When they embraced one another, ecstatic symptoms, paralysis, perspiration, tears, shivering, palpitations, and paleness appeared. The word Krishna came from their mouths falteringly. When the stereotyped ritualistic Brahmins who were following the Vedic principles saw this ecstatic manifestation of love, they were struck with wonder. All these Brahmins began to reflect as follows. These Brahmins began to think, they can see that this sannyasi has a luster like the effulgence of Brahman. But how is it he is crying upon embracing a sudra of a member of the fourth caste in the social order? They thought, this Ramananda Roy is the governor of Madras, a highly learned and grave person, a Mahapandit. But upon touching this sannyasi, he has become restless like a madman. When the Brahmins were thinking in this way about the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw the Brahmins and restrained his transcendental emotions. A couple weeks ago, gave class on this chapter as a whole and shared a technique that I like to use, and some people may not have heard that, or to reiterate it, because it helps me to formulate a theme and then expand upon it. One of the features of the Lord, just like that story of the Brahmin and the cobbler, you remember that the cobbler was faithful that the Lord could put the trunk of an elephant through the eye of a needle, because if he can put a whole banyan tree into a seed, then why couldn't he fit the trunk of an elephant through the eye of a needle? So one of the potencies of the Lord is that things can become condensed and encapsulated into a simple truth, but that truth can be expanded and fluffed out. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami gives the example of cotton. If you pick cotton, it looks like a little ball, but you can fluff it out so it becomes bigger and bigger. Madan Mohan and I were just talking about how all of Srila Prabhupada's lectures, years worth of lectures, morning walks, conversations, are on 15 gigabytes on a little hard drive. So it's the whole thing put in like a seed. And so much information is there. When Lord Krishna first instructed Lord Brahma, there was only one Veda. Sometimes the four verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chatur Shloki, are described. And then Narada, Vyas expanded it, and so many different acharyas subsequently to them. And every single day in so many temples around the world, classes are being given on the same topic. It's like fluffing out and expanding that original concept. So the idea of this method of meditation is to find like the whorl of a flower, a central theme, and then expand upon it. And we discussed how this chapter's theme could be one of the core verses of Bhagavad Gita. Machita matkada prana boreyanta parasparam katayantaschamam nityam tosyanticha ramanticha. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss, always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So here we see an example of that. Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya haven't even begun to converse about details in Krishna consciousness. But because they have natural affection for one another, their consciousness is awakened to that reality, then these symptoms appear. So just like we have the whorl of the flower, and then different petals appear, in our verses today, there are two main petals that I picked out. One is the petal of ecstatic symptoms. It's a whole science. It's just like another example that we gave a couple of weeks ago was folders on your computer. The whole chapter can be compared to a folder, and then we open it up, and there's a folder on ecstatic symptoms. And then you open that folder up, and there's a whole science of ecstatic symptoms. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy discuss, each one of the topics, Varnashram, Yat Karosi Yat Ashnasi, Sarvadhaman Pratyaja, each verse is a whole science and a whole petal on this flower of their conversation. So we have the flower of ecstatic symptoms today, and just above it, slightly covering it, is the concept of Vedic rituals and ritualistic Brahmanism, which kind of covers that petal, in the sense that when Lord Chaitanya saw those Brahmins who were following the Vedic principles, his ecstatic symptom, his ecstatic mood, became covered, influenced, broken. Now to share a little bit about my experience and how I weaved this, a meditation during the last couple of weeks. They send an email to each person, to everybody about when they're going to speak, so I've been meditating about it for a couple of weeks. Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya embracing. It's been beautiful. What a nice meditation on the banks of the Godavari. Simultaneously, we're conducting a Bhagavad Gita e-course starting in 2 weeks. So I naturally go over the book prior to the class to get study materials and things together. So I was reading the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada spends 3 pages talking about Sanatan Dharma and Sanatan Dhamma and the eternal nature of the living entity. So how does the ecstatic symptoms of Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, the ritualistic Brahmins and their vision, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's stopping his ecstatic experience, and the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, all interrelate into our flower with its whorl and its petals? Machita matkata prana. Machita. Chitta means consciousness. Srila Prabhupada translates it as the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. But chitta, consciousness, can also be analyzed and fluffed out. There are basically 3 states of consciousness. One is the awakened state, when we're awake. Like jiv, jago, jag, jagara. Jagara means the awakened state. When the consciousness is awake in a material body, the senses, working senses and knowledge acquiring senses, are constantly, the whole time you're awake, the senses are bombarding and influencing consciousness. They're sending messages in contact with their objects. So this is a state of consciousness that's compared with the surface of the ocean, surface of a body of water. It's agitated. It's always little wavy. It's moving. Our consciousness is constantly being bombarded and influenced and agitated, the modes of nature, constantly dictating it and pushing it. And most people in the world, most living entities in the world, live in that state most of their lives. The next state is swapna, sleep. During sleep, the working senses and the knowledge acquiring senses are inactive. They're just lying on a bed. But yet consciousness is still active in the form of dreams. And what we did during the day when we were in the awakened state, the activities we perform, the people we see, the smells we experience, the tastes, the sounds, all influence our swapna state when we're asleep. And similarly, when we're sleeping, what we dream, how well we sleep, how deep our alpha waves, even scientists have gone into the different levels of sleep and waves that the brain goes through during that time, also influence our awakened state. So what's underneath affects what's up above. And this is an important concept in our understanding of ecstatic symptoms. What's underneath influences what's above. Saw recently a documentary on an artist, and he was given a commission to work on the wall of a chapel, to do whatever he wanted on this wall of the chapel. So he chose, it was in France, and he chose to take clay and do a collage on the wall. Now this wall obviously had beams, and like we have, what are those things behind the wall called? Studs, thank you. We can't see the studs. There are 2x4s probably, in every 24 inches or 16 inches, whatever it might be, depending on your building, behind the wall. So what he did was he found the architectural drawings of that wall, and then he put the clay onto the wall. When it was wet, he mixed it together and then put it all over the wall. But he did it in such a way so that different clay and different colors were on the different parts of the wall. And what he found out, what he knew would happen, because he'd done it before in other commissions, was that where there are beams behind the wall, the drying will take longer. So the drying period, the drying time, will take longer and influence the drying of the clay differently. And he did this whole collage that came out quite uniquely because he understood what was underneath the wall. And he was able to create that clay in different ways when it completely dried and cracked. All the different patterns on the wall were there because he knew what was underneath, and the drying period was different. So similarly, what is underneath in our consciousness, like the iceberg, when a person sees an iceberg, they only see what's on top of the water. They don't see the vast or a volcano. Or if you plant something in the ground and just a little bit spurts up, and as it grows, all we see is what's above the ground. We don't understand what's under the ground. So much work, so much root system is going on there. So in yoga, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, in the 6th chapter, is describing a process by which a person can drill and mine deeper into the consciousness, rather than existing simply on the agitated surface of the conscious mind, always being on the sensual external plane. He talks about how one can go deeper into consciousness through the practice of the Eightfold Yoga System. There are things to do and things not to do, yama and niyama. Then sit down, asana, pranayama, start to concentrate on breathing. Pratyahara is the process of bringing the consciousness away and internal rather than from the external. Then dharana, beginning to meditate and fix the mind. Then dhyana, and finally samadhi. So what is samadhi? It's a state of consciousness called shukshmendriya. It's underneath the sleeping and the awake stage. It lies there all the time. But what happens is that we don't connect with that. So our pleasure in the material world is experienced by what? Again, back to the Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana means eternal, and Dharma means the characteristic of something. Water is wet, fire is hot, sugar is sweet, chilies are hot, salt is salty. These characteristics of the items never change. So the Dharma, the eternal nature of consciousness, of our consciousness, of us as eternal entities, mamaivamsa jivaloke, jivabhuta sanatana, we are fragmental conscious particles of supreme consciousness. But we have become so covered, so perverted, so transformed by this material world, and especially the covering of false ego, that we identify completely what is enjoyment, our emotional states of what is love, what is happiness, so many different experiences, our pure consciousness filtered through the material world. The nice example is just like if you have a light, like in theater, if you go to the stage, if you go to a live performance, they have these big spotlights, and then they have like a round thing in front of it, and there's so many different colored glasses, green, orange, yellow, blue, and whatever color the person puts in front of the pure light will create a tint on the stage, a blue tint, a red tint, a yellow tint, depending on the filter. So according to the way each living entity is conditioned, they experience enjoyment, pleasure, and life in the material world. So the question naturally arises, Atato Brahma Jignasa, what am I doing here, and how? What is the process by which one can again attain that pure, transcendental, eternal, spiritually enlivening, blissful nature? How do we do it? This is actually the purpose of human life. How can I find eternal pleasure? What is the process? How do I apply myself so that gradually I can again get back to that situation? And thus, the Vedas are a formula for gradual progression through the modes of material nature to a higher form, to a pure form. The purpose of the Vedas, Vedaischa Savar Aham Eva Vedya, Vedanta Vid Vedakud Eva Chaham. The purpose of the Vedas is for the living entity to again awaken its eternal Sanatana Dharma, its eternal natural pure consciousness. So, these Brahmins who are traveling with Ramananda Roy are actually following Vedic culture. The question has to be raised, why, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw these people who were performing ritualistic life of Vedic culture, was his ecstasy broken? Why weren't they all in ecstasy together? What was the difference between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and these other people? And this brings us to the science of different levels of advancement, even in spiritual life. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, as we read in 26, are eternal associates, and their swarup, their siddha deha, their understanding of who they are eternally, is who they are. Not that they're in a consciousness of a false personality. I'm an American, or I'm an Indian, and I'm governor of Madras. He knew that it was a very temporary part he was playing. His bhav, his more focused identity, was as the associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, in his siddha deha, he's Vishakha, one of the intimate associates of Srimati Radharani. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu desiring to understand the love of Srimati Radharani. So naturally, when that consciousness came together, this flow of ecstasy manifested. It's also wonderful that the six Goswamis, especially Rupa Goswami, has analyzed this science of ecstatic symptoms and consciousness and left us unlimited knowledge and products to study, so that we can also, it's a gradual process. The human form of intelligence is meant to study this information, digest this information, meditate on it, and gradually transform our consciousness from this false concepts to that pure spiritual state. So I'm going to read a little bit from Nectar of Devotion, where he describes these ecstatic symptoms and the science of it. It's called existential ecstatic love. There are eight symptoms of existential ecstatic love: becoming stunned, perspiring, standing of the hairs on the body, faltering of the voice, trembling of the body, changing of bodily colors, shedding of tears, and devastation. The scientific explanation of these eight symptoms is given by Rupa Goswami as follows. When the vital force of life is in contact with the earth, one is stunned. So we just read, Keshava was just reading about Srimati Radharani in an intoxicated state. What happens is that if consciousness is pure and circumstances develop such that the earth element comes in contact with that consciousness, it causes a reaction of being stunned. When the same force comes into contact with water, there is shedding of tears. When the same force comes into contact with fire, there's perspiration. When the force comes into contact with the sky, there's devastation. And when that force comes into contact with the air, there's trembling, failing of the voice, and standing of the hairs on the body. These symptoms are sometimes manifested internally and sometimes externally. The pure devotee always feels such symptomatic expressions within himself, but being afraid of outsiders, he does not generally manifest them externally. We're supposed to meditate on this every day. Can anybody quote a verse that we sing every day that discusses or explains or describes this ecstatic symptoms? You got it. Yeah. Romancha Kampa, Shruta Ranga Bhajo. These are described. What was the verse again? Stamba, Veda, Ashru, Kampa, Pulaka, Vaivarnya. I don't know if it's true. Yadubari didn't stay here. But I heard that when he would take pictures of Srila Prabhupada, when the photographs in those days, it wasn't digital. You didn't take a picture and have it immediately come up on your camera. You took the picture and then had to go back to the photography room and use the chemicals. And what happens is you take the slide, you take the film, put it in the chemical, transform it, then it comes out on the paper. And they used to like shake it in the paper, and then the picture would gradually manifest. And sometimes they could actually see that the colors on Srila Prabhupada's body were slightly different. This changing of color, paleness. We've all experienced what's called dry symptoms. Everybody's had choking of the voice, or perspiring, or when we're nervous, maybe choking of the voice. These symptoms are shadow experiences of what can actually happen on the transcendental plane. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy embraced, they were overwhelmed by this. There's another nice example of it also. Another devotee. After 7 days, it's not that it always happens just by coming into contact with Krishna. The nature of Krishna, all attractive, is also all blissful. His nature, his dharma, is all blissful. So, and all purifying. Coming into contact with that personality, with his name, quality, forms, and pastimes, in their purest state, is immediately pleasurable. We don't, and other people, especially who don't take the devotional service, don't experience that pleasure, even though in contact with it, because they're contaminated, they're dirty. So upon hearing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's explanation of the Atmarama verse, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was struck with wonder. He then understood Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be Krishna in person, and thus condemned himself in the following words. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is certainly Lord Krishna himself. Because I could not understand him and was very proud of my own learning, I have committed many offenses. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya denounced himself as an offender and took shelter of the Lord desired to show him mercy. To show him mercy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu allowed him to see his Vishnu form. Thus he immediately assumed four hands. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first showed him the four-handed form and then appeared before him in his original form as Krishna, with a blackish complexion and a flute to his lips. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya saw the form of Lord Krishna manifested in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he immediately fell down flat to offer him obeisances. Then he stood up with folded hands and began to offer prayers. By the mercy of the Lord, all the truths were revealed to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and he could understand the importance of chanting the holy name and distributing love of God everywhere. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya composed 100 verses in a very short time. Indeed, not even Brihaspati, the priest of the heavenly planets, could compose verses as quickly. Purport, name of the book of the 100 verses, is Shushloka Sataka. After hearing the 100 verses, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu happily embraced Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was immediately overwhelmed in ecstatic love and fell unconscious. Then a very similar verse to today. Ashru stamba pulaka sveda kampata harani nache gaya kande pade prabhu pada dhari. Out of ecstatic love of God, the Bhattacharya shed tears. His body was stunned. He exhibited an ecstatic mood and he perspired, shook, and trembled. He sometimes danced, chanted, sometimes cried, sometimes fell on the ground to touch the lotus feet of the Lord. While Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was in this ecstasy, Gopinath Acharya was very pleased. The associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all laughed to see the Bhattacharya dance so. Gopinath Acharya told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Oh, sir, you have brought this upon Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "You are a devotee. Because of your association, Lord Jagannath has shown him mercy." After this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pacified the Bhattacharya, and when he was quieted, he offered many prayers to the Lord. So this is the daily experience of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his associates, Ramananda Rai, Swarup Damodar, Raghunath Das Goswami. It's the ecstatic mood of Krishna, Balaram, Sudam, Sridam, Vishakha, Lalita, Radharani. All these activities are blissfully being performed eternally, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, from the beginning of time to the end of time, which there isn't any, because it's eternal. And unfortunately, we're here in the material world under the glacier of our false ego. But this process, another nice point from Bhagavad Gita, as I was meditating on this, I was actually realizing that Krishna himself, we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita how Krishna came. Part of the reason that he did it was to perform pastimes to attract the living entities. And then we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita how he understood that although I've performed these Sringara Rasa, I've performed the Madhurya Rasa with the gopis in a Rasa dance, people won't understand it. So I have to come again as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and explain it. So also, his teachings of Bhagavad Gita are like fundamentals to understanding this science. And if we don't understand the fundamentals, we can't understand the higher parts of it. Just like in sports, played sports as a kid, and we always used to have to practice. Even you go to the professional teams of any sports, basketball, and you go to their practice. It's not that they just play games. They also practice. And during the practice, they throw the ball certain ways, they dribble certain ways, or they kick the ball in certain ways, and they practice fundamentals. So the fundamentals, again, back to our theme of something lying underneath and influencing that which is on the surface. Our practice of fundamentals, Vaidhi Bhakti, reading of Bhagavad Gita, studying the teachings of Krishna, are like layers of elevating us to higher consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita also, it describes a little bit about the Brahmins. We read about these Brahmins who are standing nearby. So, what does Krishna say about the Vedas and studying the Vedas in the Bhagavad Gita? The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Be freed from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by great reservoirs of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served by one who knows the purpose behind them. In other words, all the rules and rituals are not in themselves the goal. The rules and regulations are supposed to bring one to something. They're a means, they're a vehicle to bring one to what? To love of God, to love of Krishna. So in that purport to that verse, Srila Prabhupada explains that all the purposes of the Vedas can be fulfilled by what? Yes, what is one who knows the purpose behind them? What is the process? What is the ritual? What is the Vedic activity in this age? Yes. Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the fuel. It's the laser. It's the means. It's the very function which will cleanse the heart. Chaito Darpana Marjanam Dava Maha Devakani. It's an ocean of material existence. But by chanting the holy name of the Lord, again, we're back to fundamentals. It's a daily fundamental activity that should be done attentively, enthusiastically. It's not easy. Srila Prabhupada used the expression, cultivate Krishna consciousness. You want to cultivate a garden. You can't just go out and throw a bunch of seeds. They probably won't grow as well as if you till the soil. You put the work into it. You take out the rocks. You turn the soil over. You go out in the heat and cultivate that. Pick the weeds when they start to grow. It's not an easy process. So the process of Krishna consciousness in the beginning is extremely, you get the bliss, but it's also work. And as we progress, the idea is supposed to happen is that our material involvement, our conscious jagara, our life on the external plane with the external consciousness of what is going on a sensual plane is supposed to lessen. And we're supposed to become more absorbed in what's internally, eternally there, that ecstasy of love of Krishna. And when one tastes that and experiences that pleasure, then it's natural to give up that which is external and less pleasurable. Vishayavani vartante niharasya dehinam. That one gives up the lesser pleasure for the higher pleasure. But of course we have to experience it. And you have to apply yourself in order to experience it, so it's the cycle of life for us as devotees. Jai, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Nagaraj Prabhu.
Isn't it true that sometimes devotees don't like... Here, Lord Chaitanya, he has these outsiders, so he's covering himself up, you might say. But there's this verse, Evam Ritav Swapriyanam Akircha. And it ends, a devotee last cries, dances like a madman without caring for outsiders.
Yes.
So what determines whether one controls it or lets it all hang
boy.
Out?
Nice question. Stump. we see here that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy didn't restrain their ecstasy. It was so spontaneous and so overwhelming. But after moments of rolling, and I mean, these people were rolling on the ground on the banks of the Godavari together, crying, perspiring, oh, Krishna, Krishna. And then after some moments, then they saw the Brahmins. And that mood was transformed. So I guess my understanding would be that the audience also, I would give anything to be a Sajatiya. To make it so that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is having that ecstasy, he doesn't feel in any way restrained, but feels completely open to express himself. And I'll do anything, go anywhere for eternity to be able to enter that state of being, and that's why we're devotees. So, I know that if I was there, it wouldn't be so. So I really don't have entrance into why or how that might take place. Pushkar Prabhu?
I'll just put forth some speculation about that situation, because we were surrounded by 1,000 of these guys.
Oh, that's right. There was a lot of people.
It wasn't like we go out in the street, we act a little crazy. We also don't roll on the ground, although Bhuvi Vlatam Nivasha, there's another verse, describes that also, but we don't care what the public says. Rupa Goswami has a verse like that. Bhuvi Vlatam Nivashama, just roll on the ground. It literally says, we don't care what the garrulous public says, all nonsense. We just roll, and we don't roll generally on the ground when we go out in Harinam, but we jump, that kind of blows their minds enough. Huh? No, in about an hour, I'll do it. But because it was a preponderance of these guys, and Ramananda is supposed to be the chief, and he's supposed to be grave there also. But one question is, like I was going to ask, which probably can't be answered, but first they're thinking in one verse, they're saying, oh, he's a sudra, and he's embracing the sannyasi and rolling on the ground. I guess because the sannyasi is not supposed to touch a sudra. But on the other hand, they had great respect for him because he was the governor. So it seems contradictory that they're considering him a sudra. I guess, they know he's a sudra, but they consider he's a great pundit, right? This just recent verse?
Yes.
Said so. I mean, how are they thinking, really?
Perhaps.
He's a sudra, but he's a great pundit. Generally, sudras, even in those days, weren't great pundits. So they had this awe and reverence for him. So I guess they had to maintain that kind of profile. You can't just start.
I think also what you've brought out just by discussing it is their mentality. They're identifying him, not his eternal swarup or his eternal nature. They're seeing who he is in society. And their nature by Vedic Brahmins and all those rules and regulations is naturally to identify somebody according to their social status rather than beyond that.
They probably had no idea that he's as great.
Obviously.
He's Svajati.
Yes. Madan Prabhu? Madan Mohan?
On that same point, I was just saying, Atmavan Manyate Jagata, they see in relationships. So also the Brahmins, they have this thing that the Brahmins are the highest in society. Mm. So they certainly could not deny his expertise in the Shastra. They must have had many points. But just like with Sarvabhauma, he also had many philosophical developed strategies and understanding. And so I'm sure Lord that Ramananda Roy also had conversations with them, with these Brahmins. So they understood him as a pundit, but to understand him as...
But he wasn't born in a Brahmin family, so therefore he still wasn't one.
Yes. Huh. So there's still that Brahminism that.
We're back to that. What's that one? Vinir Maktam, Tat Patradvina Nirmalam, Sarvopadi. Sarvopadi, the upadis, the identifying. We identify so strongly and identify others so strongly with what we see.
And we could tell how prominent it was that even when they started discussing, Ramananda Roy brought that up 2 or 3 times, the first points about Varnashram.
Yes.
That's the only way. So, I mean, it's a prominent thing. This is such an inside view that we're getting that, and of course, because that's the way we raise is basically all that we know. But that wasn't the way society was. That wasn't the common understanding that there's something beyond Varnashram. I mean, where would you have got that information?
No, living in Jagannathpur, it's still very much today, even.
Yeah, so
in some parts of the world, obviously. I mean, where they have genocide in some places, killing somebody just because they're born in a different tribe.
So it's very confident.
No, not that. Just the concept that if you meet somebody in Jagannath Puri, by their surname you know what their caste is. Therefore, you're that. That's who you are, and how you that's it. That's your identity. Hmm. Jai, Srila Prabhupada, Ramananda Rai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai.